All right. This morning, we're going to continue in the book of Proverbs. And, you know, society today has become more and more violent. There is violence all over the world. You see it in the news quite often, not only crime here in the United States, but also armed militias and all kinds of things that go on in other countries, whether it's down in South America and Mexico and with drug cartels and that sort of thing. They gather together and they hurt people. They have an idea in their mind that they want to accomplish a goal, whether it's to make money and sell drugs or whatever it might be, or get to a political end, and they are going to use violence in order to meet that goal of theirs. They don't care who they hurt in the meantime and what they do. And the Bible has, especially the book of Proverbs, has a number of things to say about the violence that we see. And we can expect it as it was in the days of Noah, so it is these days as well. The days of Noah were very violent. And everyone did, the Bible says, what was right in their own hearts and their own minds. And we see that same thing happening right here and right now. And Jesus warned us that towards the end, in the end days, before the tribulation period, before his coming again, that there would be violence on the earth, that it would get more and more violent. And so we can expect that that's the way it's going to be. We can even expect persecution to take place as a result here for us as believers, even in the United States. It's very likely that that's going to take place. So we want to talk about or look at the scriptures, the Proverbs this morning, as to what the Bible has to say about this violence. And violence, of course, is physically hurting somebody that is unauthorized or is on your own authority. Now, of course, a government has the ability and the authority by God to use violence to do good. Okay, now they're the only ones sanctioned by God to be able to do that, and we'll discuss that a little bit here too. But other violence is not sanctioned by God. Taking matters into our own hands and making our own decisions as to who's going to get hurt for what reasons is not something that we have the ability to do. So the first thing that we see in looking at violence is in Proverbs chapter 1, the very beginning. He starts off with this in Proverbs chapter 1, and he's going to tell kind of a little scenario, if you will, to his students or to his son, King Solomon is going to do that. So first thing is we see is the soliciting of evil. And it starts with peer pressure. And all of these things, these violence situations, are going to be peer pressure, mob mentality type of situations many times. I shouldn't say always. Many times it is that way. It says in verse 10 of Proverbs chapter 1, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." Okay, he hasn't got into what they're going to entice him about, but if they're going to entice you, do not consent. Now, I think this is really good that he starts with this, because this is the idea of peer pressure. And peer pressure can be used to do all sorts of things. In this case, it's going to be used for violence. But a group will always try to get you to do what they want you to do, right? And they'll use that peer pressure to kind of move you along to do something that you ought not to do. Kids, you face this many times with your peers in school, and it can be a very powerful tool that people use in order to get you to go along with something that may not be right. Whether it is hurting somebody else physically, not usually the case, but usually it's putting somebody down. You have a group and they don't like somebody else, and they're going to do something, say something to that person to put them down or hurt them, and they're going to entice you to be a part of that. That's that peer pressure to do that. So he deals with this peer pressure first. If sinners entice you, If they sound good or they want you want to be part of their group, do not consent. You need to stand firm and not do what the group is doing just because the group is doing it. You need to do what is right as God says it's right. Well, no matter what the group may decide to do, you need to do what God wants you to do. So don't consent with their sin, but instead stand apart from it and fight against that. And oftentimes in this peer pressure, they appeal to their power. We see this in gangs and different things as well. They say, if they say, and here's this scenario again that King Solomon is going to use, come with us and let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. In other words, these people are saying to the new recruit, if you will, hey, listen, we have the power to hurt people. We have the power even to take life. And if you join with us, you will gain that power as well. We are feared. We are mighty. Nobody is better than us. We are stronger than anybody else. And if you will join with us, you can be part of the strong group. That's enticing. For some people, very enticing, but it's also very dangerous, as we're going to see as well. But that's the enticement, the peer pressure to be part of a group, and that's what is really in bigger cities and that sort of thing. You see these gangs and with drug, especially with drug use and different things like that. They have these gangs. Hey, we are strong. Nobody can overpower us, and we're stronger than any of the other gangs, and we're going to take care of business and rule the world, basically, or at least our little area of it. So that's the enticement. And they also appeal to easy money, because money is usually involved in these type of things. It says, we will find all kinds of precious wealth, and we will fill our houses with spoil. We are strong, and we are rich. And if you join with us, you can be strong and you can be rich as well. That's the enticement to join in, the peer pressure to join in with a group like this that wants to do evil, that is doing wickedness. So they can get all of these things. You can have these things. If you'll just compromise, if you'll just be willing to hurt somebody, if you'll just be willing to do violence, you can have these things as well. So come along with us. And see how powerful and how rich you can be. Throw your lot in with us. We shall all have one purse. Hey, we're going to share these things. That's a lie, by the way, isn't it? They promise all these things, but there's always a hierarchy. There's always somebody getting more than somebody else. And they say that there's going to be one purse. But you end up being on the short end of the stick. Because if they're willing to do violence against somebody else, then they're willing to do it against you, even though you might be part of their group. So Solomon warns about these things. He says, don't trust them. Don't trust them. Again, if they're willing to do these types of things, they're not trustworthy. They're not telling the truth. So don't trust them. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path. So if they entice you to walk with them, and notice the feet here, you got to notice the feet. They entice you to walk with them. Solomon says, walk away from them. They want you to point your feet towards them. And Solomon says, no, point your feet away from them and go away. Get away from them. Don't trust them. Do not walk in the way with them. And that walking in the way is a way of life, a manner of life. Keep your feet from their path. Don't go anywhere near them. Don't go anywhere near what they're doing or anything. Don't do anything that they tell you to do. And usually they groom people, young people, especially in larger cities. You know, hey, just run these drugs for us. Hey, we'll pay. You don't even know what's in the package. Just take this package and you're going to deliver this package to somebody else. Just do that and I'll give you more than money than you've ever made in your life. And that's enticing to them. But he says, don't even walk with them. Stay away from them. Go away. Don't keep your feet from their path. because they can't deliver. They say that they can deliver, and they say that they're going to give you all of these promises and give you all these things, but they can't really deliver. For their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to spread the baited net in the sight of any bird. And here's the illustration that I use for the kids. It's useless to set up a net for a bird if it's in full sight. If you don't camouflage it, if you don't hide it in some way, the bird is going to see that. And it's a bird brain. You know, it's not that smart. But it can see those things, and it knows better than to climb under that net that has been set for it if you do it within its sight. But they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. They set the net for themselves, and they walk right into it, even though it's in full view, and they're the ones that put it there. They can't deliver on their promises, or the promises that they say that they can give to you, the wealth and the power, are only for a short period of time. They wait in blood for their own lives, and they ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. Even coups and different things like you see going on in the world these days, it oftentimes ends up taking the life of those who are involved in those coups. It's a hard way of living, to live this way in a way of violence. If you gain by that kind of violence, it's going to take the life of its possessor. So Solomon says to stay away from those things. Stay away from groups that entice you to do those things. Again, this is, you might say to yourself, well, we're not in a big city. We're in Vermont, for crying out loud. There aren't any gangs around, and there's not going to be anybody that entice me to do violence against somebody else. Well, that may be true. Why is this important? Well, because, again, we are living in violent days. We are living in violent times. And God sets this as a standard for us, as something to put out there for the world to understand that this is not right. Violence is not the way that we use to get what we want. And it's something that standard that we need to hold out there and hold on to, even though it might not affect us directly here in the state of Vermont. It is still something that we need to hold out there. We need to keep this standard for the Lord, or else the violence will continue to get stronger and stronger and stronger. But we need to stem the tide by looking at God's word. All right, number two is violence here. Violence specifically. Don't want what they have. We want to be careful not to want what those who are violent, what they want. It says, do not envy a man. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 31. Do not envy a man of violence, and do not choose any of his ways. This goes with the enticement. You look at somebody who may be strong, and they may be rich, and they may have all of these things that they have gained by violence, and somebody might be enticed by that, might look at that and go, well, hey, why am I being good? Why am I being the nice guy? And why am I being poor and not very strong and not having all the things that this other person who doesn't care about hurting people has? Solomon says, do not envy that. Do not look at that and say, wow, that's good. Because it's not. Do not choose any of his ways. And again, it's the idea of turning your feet away from them rather than going with them. For the devious are an abomination to the Lord, but he is intimate with the upright. And here's the relationship contrast. Those who are this way and are devious and that sort of thing, they're separated from God because of what they do is an abomination to God. He does not like that type of action. But for those who are walking with God and those who are upright, they have an intimate relationship. That righteousness, you're walking in righteousness with God, there is going to be a relationship there that is the basis of that righteousness and uprightness. So you give up so much by going along with the crowd, by falling into the peer pressure, by being a part of the violence. You are, and it's an abomination to the Lord. You're not intimate with him. So he says, let's not be that way. He says, don't get caught in their trap. Here's this trap idea again. You'll see some of these themes come up again. Oftentimes, as King Solomon is teaching his students and his son, the violence of the wicked will drag them away because they refuse to act with justice. And again, here's that same idea of being trapped by their own net. Their violence will drag them away. I think about so many of these dictators and different things who take over their country by force and by violence and that sort of thing. What happens to them? Mussolini, some of these incredibly bad rulers who did these things, they end up dying as a result of it because they refuse to act with justice. So we're not to envy that. And we're not to fall for their act. What do we mean by that? Well, it is an act. It says, a wicked man displays a bold face, but as for the upright, he makes his way sure. You know, they act all macho, and they talk a big game, but in the end, they're not as strong as the upright. Those who are truly walking with God, have a relationship with Jesus Christ, and are walking with God, are much more confident, oftentimes are much more confident in what they're doing because they trust in God and it's a firm foundation for them. Oftentimes the wicked men who are out to do violence, they display a bold face, but really inwardly they're scared to death and they're always looking over their shoulder. Because if they're willing to do violence against somebody, then somebody's willing to do violence against them. So they're always walking looking back at their shoulders. I remember my dad telling me a story. My dad was a police officer in Detroit, Michigan, during the early 70s, around the time I was born. And that was during the time when Detroit was the murder capital of the world. It was a violent place. It was a scary place. It was one of the reasons why we moved. We got out of there. But he was telling me that he and his partner, he had a partner named Jim, and my dad's like 6'1", 6'2", pretty big guy, right? Well, his partner Jim was even taller and bigger than he was. And so oftentimes what they would do is when they pulled somebody over, my dad would step out first and go talk to the person if there was a violation of some sort or a car violation or something like that. And my dad would step out and they were pretty intimidated by him, and he would talk with them, and if they were giving him guff, and he'd say, Jim, and Jim would get out of the car and he's even bigger, and they're like, whoa, they keep getting bigger and bigger, we better listen to these guys. But my dad told me this story, they arrested this guy, and I forget exactly what he was doing. But he was just mouthing, you know, calling them names, every name that you can call a police officer. This guy was calling him names. They were, I'm gonna put you down. Oh, we're gonna get you, and you can't arrest me. You can't do this to me. I wasn't doing anything wrong, and all of these things, saying all of these things, and so they got Jim out, and got him arrested, put some handcuffs on him, and put him in the car. And no sooner had they gotten him in the car than this guy just starts bawling his eyes out. No, you can't take me to jail. I can't go. He was just crying because he put up a front. He put up a face. He acted all tough as a hardened criminal. But he was really scared. And he knew it. And he knew what the consequences were of his actions. And he just broke down. I always love that story. I think it's hilarious. But what a good illustration of what it is like for these wicked men who put on this bold face. They're just as scared as anybody else. And don't let them make you think otherwise. Also, the third thing that we're going to see in this section on violence is murders. What do we do with somebody who is a murderer? That's one of the worst kinds of violence, of course, is when you actually use violence to take somebody else's life. Didn't give me the verse. Verse 17, a man who is laden with guilt of human blood will be a fugitive until death, is the verse that, for some reason, it didn't put it up on the screen. But a man who is laden with the guilt of human blood will be a fugitive until death. Let no one support him. And the idea is this, you know, somebody who has truly committed murder, they're going to be vexed by that their whole life. And back in the days of Israel, they had sanctuary cities. And if you killed somebody, you could run to a sanctuary city. And at that city, you could be free from the vengeance of the family. And oftentimes, it was the family who came of the person who was murdered. They came to press charges, if you will, against somebody who murdered them. And it was up to the sanctuary city to create a trial and decide the guilt or the innocence of that person. And then they were to, if they were found guilty, they would release them to the family and to the community to be stoned. And that was one of the ways that was the way they dealt with murder back then. But they will be a fugitive until death. And they had to stay in that city. Even if they were found innocent, they had to stay in that city for a long, long time. And were not allowed to leave that city. And if they left that city, they could be taken and their life could be taken. So it says, let no one support him. So somebody who's truly done murder, even in the nation of Israel, they were not to be supported. So you don't just let them stay in the sanctuary city if they are truly found guilty of the murder. You don't support them. You release them and allow justice to take place, at least in the nation of Israel at that time. So that's how we're to deal with murderers. You don't support them in that way. You're supposed to take care of that. Now, causing harm as well, we see another section here on causing harm, is do not devise harm against your neighbor, Proverbs chapter 3, verse 29. While he lives securely beside you. And this is about doing violence to somebody who's right next to you, your neighbor, somebody who's close to you. It says, do not contend with a man without cause if he has done you no harm. So this is the kindness that we are to show towards our neighbors. Not do violence against them. Not do things that are going to hurt our neighbors, especially if it's without cause. Again, this is setting the standard. It's setting how we're supposed to treat one another. Again, that needs to be established and reestablished today because, you know, our world is just saying, well, hey, whatever you want to do is okay for you. And go ahead and do whatever you feel like doing. Again, that's the same thing that we saw in the days of Noah. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. We don't want to be like that. There are rules and there are societal rules and laws and different things for a purpose. We don't want to just pick on our neighbors just because we can. We want to have a just society. We want to have a kind society where we care about one another. And so that's what he's talking about there in dealing with our neighbors. The next section in number 5 here is on revenge. And this one's interesting. Do not be a witness against your neighbor without cause, and do not deceive with your lips. Do not say, thus I shall do to him as he has done to me. I will render to the man according to his work. And again, here are these scenarios. Again, Solomon puts these scenarios out there as examples of ways that violence can take place or ways that revenge situations where revenge can take place. But here you have somebody who can tell a lie, basically, about their neighbor and deceive everybody with their lips and say, hey, this guy did this, this thing that was wrong, and I'm going to say these lies and do these things to my neighbor because he did something to mean to me, so I'm going to get him back. This is the revenge that they're going to have. And even back then, Solomon says, don't do that. Do not say, I will do to him as he has done to me. I will render to the man according to his work. Now, why shouldn't we do that? Well, because that's not our responsibility. That doesn't leave room for the judgment of God. And we see, and we'll see that in a second, actually. But God is the one who takes care of these things and brings the judgment that needs to take place. We're not to take matters into our own hands and hurt somebody. Just because they may have even hurt us. We're not to take those matters into our own hands. And dissension and strife, number six here in this section, causing dissension and strife, and this is really where it starts, where violence begins, is the strife and dissension with each other. He evaluates strife here in verse 16 of Proverbs chapter 6. There are six things which the Lord hates, yes, seven which are an abomination to him. And that should perk up our ears a little bit, okay? Now, there are certain, all sin is sin, right? But there are certain things that are abominations to God, that are just beyond the pale, that are just very, very bad, that God really, really hates. There are seven which are an abomination to him, okay? So these are the things that God hates. What does he hate? Haughty eyes. That's looking down, and high eyes, looking down on somebody else and thinking that you are better than somebody else. God hates that? That's an abomination to him? Yes, absolutely. That does harm and looks down upon other people who are made in the image of God. And so God says, we're not to do that because that would be looking down at God as well. We're not to have that thing. A lying tongue. We're not to lie. Lying is an abomination to God. Now, we think of other things as being abominations, but before we even get to murder, which is the shedding of innocent blood, hands that shed innocent blood, that's murder. That's an abomination to God. But before we get to that, you got haughty eyes and a lying tongue are both things that God hates and are abominations to him. A heart also that devises wicked plans and feet that run rapidly towards evil. You can just picture somebody running right towards that evil. I'm going to do this thing. They make a decision in their mind that they're going to do something that's evil and they run to it and they're going to do it. These are all things that are that God absolutely hates. And also, a false witness who utters lies and one who spreads strife among brothers. Now, I don't know about you, but some of these I wouldn't necessarily think that God would be. I know obviously they're sinful and they're wrong, but some of them are a little more acceptable in the eyes of modern man, aren't they? A little white lie or something like that. That's not a big deal, right? Yeah, it is. God hates that stuff. That's an abomination to him. One who spreads strife among brothers. That is, one who causes people to fight with each other, you know, just puts that little seed of doubt in somebody's mind or says something, hey, do you know what somebody, you know what I heard somebody say about you? That's spreading strife among brothers, and that is an abomination to the Lord. The Lord hates those things because that is the beginning of murder, that is the beginning of violence. It starts in the heart and works its way out from there. So he hates those things. Now, preference to strife. There is a preference here that God gives. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 1. Better is a dry morsel in quietness than a house full of feasting with strife. Strife is not at all to be something that you want in your home or in your family or anything. You want to keep that out of there. Even if you're enjoying the best steaks and everything that you can possibly enjoy and the nicest home that you have it in, but if you're fighting with each other, then it doesn't matter. It's better to have a dry morsel in quietness than a house full of feasting with strife. And what is the solution then to strife? Okay, we see it's bad. God hates it. It's much worse than even being poor and not having a whole lot of people around you. What is the solution then? Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 18. The cast lot puts an end to strife and decides between the mighty ones. Now I've used this with my kids, you know, and it's really is helpful. Because we know the Lord is in control of everything, right? Even the rolling of the dice or the is in the hands of the Lord, right? So the casting of lots, they would oftentimes use casting of lots, whether it's pulling straws, you know, whoever has the short stick, you know, the short straw is begins the winner. But to end strife, if you got somebody fighting with each other and, you know, one kid in your family, you know, really wants a toy, and then the other one wants it too, and they're fighting back and forth. My kids, you guys never do that, do you? No. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe. They're fighting over the toy, you know, and they're pulling it back and forth. You picture it in your mind. You've seen it 1,000 times. I want it. No, I want it. No, I want it. And they're fighting back and forth with each other. Oftentimes, I'll just take the toy, right? But another way of dealing with it is to cast lots and just flip a coin, whatever it might be, and say, and that ends the strife. Hey, whoever gets heads, they're going to get the toy. Okay? Let's flip for it. You can do that, but these casting of the lots puts an end to the strife and decides between even those who are mighty. So just whatever it takes to get and end it, you deal with it, even if it's a matter of doing casting lots or whatever you need to do. And what's the consequences of strife? If we don't deal with it properly, if we don't take care of it, this is the consequences of it. The consequence of it, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a citadel. This is pretty strong language here. A brother is offended. If you hurt somebody, cause strife with somebody, get into an argument with somebody, it's harder to win that brother or sister back to you, to have a warm, close relationship, than it is to win a strong city. To win a war and take over a country or a city by force. And the contentions are like the bars of a citadel, the bars of a jail. You can picture that. They're strong. You're not going to break your way out of that. You're not going to break down that those bars and restore that relationship if you hurt your brother, hurt your sister, do something to cause strife in your relationship. Whether it's husbands and wives, you want to be careful not to have strife within the relationship. That's why you never let the sun go down on your anger, but you always deal with it even before you go to bed, right? Even if it's to say, okay, we need to deal with this, honey. We're both really tired. Tomorrow, let's set a time. We're going to deal with this and make sure we resolve this situation. That's your plan, okay? You've got a plan. And you're going to resolve that issue and that contention, because after contention is started, strife has begun, it is very difficult to overcome it. So don't put yourself in that situation, he says. All right, and also you're going to get bit. What do I mean by that? Well, let's take a look at the verse. It is in verse 17. It says, of that same chapter, let one who takes a dog by the ears, like one who takes a dog by the ears, is he who passes and meddles with strife not belonging to him. I love this verse, and one of these really descriptive verses, you know, and you can just picture what it happens. You're walking down the street, and you see, and I've had this situation happen. I was walking here in town, and there was a group of young people, and they were arguing with each other. And I had the fleeting thought, you know, I should go over there and try to fix this. And I'm going to try to work this out. And I don't know what they're arguing about, but they obviously need some intervention. And I'm going to go and do that. And then this verse came to mind. And I thought to myself, that is not a good idea. Just keep walking. Now, if they involve you, that's another issue. But if it is not your issue, and you're going to meddle with it. You're going to get involved with this. It is a big problem. Stay away from that strife. Don't put yourself into that situation. Don't think that you're going to solve it or anything like that. It's just going to draw you in and put you down. You're going to get bit by the dog. That's the whole point. Like one who takes a dog by the ears. You can picture that. If you grab a dog by the ears, especially a dog that you don't know, what's going to happen to you? And the dog's going to bite you. It doesn't know you. Okay, you are going to get bit. Same thing is true with meddling, with arguments that are not your own. So stay away from them. They will also pollute you if you start meddling in different things that you shouldn't meddle in. Like a trampled spring and a polluted well is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. You can picture, a well or something that gives clean drinking water, and you just let the cows run right over it and trample all over it. It's getting muddy and it's getting polluted. It's just disgusting. So is a righteous man who meddles and gives way before the wicked, allows the wicked to come in and do what they want to do, allows that meddling to take place. You don't want to be like that. And it will also weigh you down. What do we mean by that? Well, Proverbs 27:3 says, a stone is heavy and the sand weighty, but the provocation of a fool is heavier than both of them. If you allow somebody to meddle into your business, it's going to weigh you down. If you allow a fool to get involved and provoke you and get involved in strife with that person, it is going to be a heavy weight upon you, and it is going to weigh you down. So stay away from it. Try to avoid the strife as much as you possibly can. And also you will get stuck. Proverbs 28, verse 10, he who leads the upright astray is in an evil way will himself fall into his own pit, but the blameless will inherit good. And here this kind of goes back to what we saw originally in chapter 1, right? They're setting a trap for themselves. You set a trap for somebody, and you're going to draw a righteous person to do evil. You're going to end up in your own pit, and it's going to be difficult, even if it's in the judgment at the end of the age with God. But the blameless will inherit good. So let's remain blameless and righteous before God through the power of the blood of Jesus Christ in this whole. So all of these things we want to remember, start in our hearts, from the heart, flow the issues of life, the violence and everything like that, strife, contention, all of those things start in our own heart. And why are there, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you that we read in the book of James? Your own lusts who wage war against your heart. That's where it starts. You want something and you can't have it, and so you fight and you contend with somebody, you're even willing to do violence to somebody, hurt somebody physically, because you want something in your heart. Instead, what should we do? Let us be satisfied with the goodness that God provides us. Recognize that God is the giver of all of good gifts, and may we trust in Him and Him alone for what we need. So let's turn to the Lord Jesus Christ for these things and not trust in our own strength or in our own desires to go after these things. All right. Well,